statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
You are listening to In the Know with David O., informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio on 860 AM WWDB. And now, your host, Philadelphia Councilman David O.
All right. Good afternoon. This is Councilman David O. Thank you for tuning in once again to In the Know with David O. We are joined by, not just three. We have three segments, but we actually have five outstanding people here today to speak with you. And by the way, we're blessed to have a bunch of reverends in here, a bunch of pastors, you know. They come with the spirit of the Almighty. And so hopefully we shall be blessed with some insights to a positive and better world. Let me tell you that we are joined by Penny McDonald. She is the executive director of Community Forgiveness and Restoration. She is joined by the co-chairs, Pastor Larry Anderson, Pastor Daryl Dade. And then we're going to be talking to Pastor Peter Hwang. Many people know him as Bishop Peter. He is a Korean-American pastor who has been for many years doing the work of racial reconciliation, and we'll be hearing about his work. And then we'll be talking to Christine Riddick, and our topic is proof of innocence, but actually the real topic is when proof of innocence doesn't matter. And that is a deep issue for us to talk about today. But let me first thank, as I always do, our show sponsor, because without our show sponsor, we wouldn't have a show. And that is Weinerman Pain and Wellness. They're located at 100 South Broad Street, Suite 1800. That's on the 18th floor. And what they do is they help people get back to as full and a normal life as possible after a physical injury, work-related, accident, any of those type of things. You know, I used to do this type of work when I was in private law practice, and I've been to their facility, and I could tell you it's worth checking out. If you recall, last week we were talking to Dave Henderson, president of the Global War on Terror Memorial, honoring those who served and died. We also got introduced to Adventure Lost. They're a rock band here in Philadelphia. They were one of the finalists of the 2017 PHL Live Center stage. And then we talked to Richard Simpson, chair of the 82nd Airborne Division Association, Hey Jack Mokin Philadelphia chapter. And I bring it up because you can hear that show, and actually today's show and other shows, by going to the website, www.dbam.com. So if you've missed any shows, and I'm really talking about the great guests we have on, the topics that we talk about, you can check them out there. Let me start by just introducing you to Penny McDonald, Pastor Anderson, and Pastor Dade. They are part of Community Forgiveness and Restoration. It's a faith-based reentry organization, and they're in fact having a symposium on Saturday, April the 28th. It's going to be from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and we're going to hear all about it. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Let me start with Penny, because Penny, you're the executive director, and you actually wear a number of hats. I'm gonna talk about it briefly, because you're the woman to talk to. Not only is she a resident of Yadin, Pennsylvania, for over 30 years, she was elected Yadin Borough Councilwoman from 2008 to 2012, and she's currently serving as the chair of the Yadin Democratic Party. She also is the executive director of, as I said, Community Forgiveness and Restoration, but she has been president since 2007 of Pride and Passion of Yadin, a nonprofit community organization, and she's had a number of other roles, but we're going to focus today on Community Forgiveness and Restoration. What is that organization?
Well, it's a faith-based organization that provides resources for returning citizens. We're blessed to be able to go into Greaterford for 12 weeks and to work with inmates who are going to be coming home within 2 years. We go in, we meet with them twice a week for 2 hours, and we work with them with teaching them human development, spiritual development. As I said, it's a faith-based organization. We also help them to deal with some of their fears, their traumas, and some of their secrets. They share them with us. And perhaps you don't know, but in prison, they don't share their personal situation. But they share that in our organization. Because of our program, we're able to provide them with counseling, with a life coach, someone to walk with them. And my brothers here will share even more information with you. But when they come home, believe it or not, some of the guys that come home, they don't have any resources. They don't have a wherewithal of what they're going to do, how they're going to get a job, where they're going to live. And that's what our program does. Our programs help them to find housing, find a job, even give them car fare to get back and forth to work. And we're working to do even more for them. We provided clothing for some of them, but they get a life coach, and we also we welcome churches to be a part of our program so that when they come home, we can assign them to a church that's close to where they live.
Wow, that's pretty different because, you know, for those listening, someone is sentenced to a period of time, their time ends, and now they're out. But out to what? And who is there for them? Pastor Anderson, why is this so important to have churches assigned and to do this work of preparation for their release?
Well, the pain of the recidivism statistics of family members, loved ones, people who are in your community, homes being ripped apart, guys going away, they come back to a community after being locked up and then being locked out, locked out of opportunities to better themselves, locked out of housing, locked out of education, locked out of employment, broken relationships with their families. And so you have somebody who comes out. The world has changed drastically.
Yes.
Many times from when they went in. And part of the process is helping be a bridge.
Right.
For them to be able to walk over and try to start again. You know, we believe in forgiveness, you know, and unfortunately, when you go and you pay your debt to society and you do your time, you're still not forgiven. Mm. You know, you're still seen as a felon. You're still seen as a con or ex-con or whatever terminology we use to categorize and marginalize those who are trying to come back. And then we shake our heads when we see them go back to prison. But many times they go back because they ran out of options and opportunities. And so part of our goal, part of the reason we exist, is to be that bridge to help them reconnect. The program was started not by us, but by Thomas Robinson, who's on the inside. Mm-hmm. They started it. They created it. Right. Him and those who are also with him, they came up with it after their hearts broke, seeing guys leave, come out, and turn around and come right back. And they decided, what do we really need when we get out of there to stay out of here? And that's when we came in. We came in to stand beside them, to partner with them, to continue to give them voice and leadership. We are not the brainchild of this. We are the partners, the laborers, those on the outside, helping them come out and get reestablished with life.
Yeah, and for those listening, you know, there could be a number of reactions, but certainly we can agree that when someone leaves prison, we want them to be a productive member of society. We don't want them to fail. We don't want them to go back. And whatever people's feelings are about it, listen, the law is served, and hopefully with support, they will be able to have a fresh new start at life. After all, forgiveness and restoration.
Absolutely.
That's what it's all about.
Absolutely.
Pastor Dade, what is the work that you see being done that has not been done up till now?
Well, one of the things is helping these men to have a different mindset. Like Pastor Anderson said, they've been locked away and locked up. And so it's almost like an animal. When you cage an animal, that animal's not friendly when you let him out of the cage. First of all, because he's used to being confined, used to being controlled. So now you set him free. So before this can happen to these men, there's some things that have to be changed in them. There's some skills that have to be done. Like, for instance, human development, spiritual development, because they've been incarcerated, they don't understand certain things that go on in society anymore. Right. And so as we go in, we help them with such things as anger management, resentment, abandonment issues, separation issues, issues that happened to them when they were children growing up,
right.
Stigmas that happened to them, you know, trauma that happened in their life that nobody ever helped them to deal with. And so what we do is we help to correct some of the things that have gone wrong in their life before they were even incarcerated.
And it may come as a surprise to some people, but the prison isn't preparing them for a successful life because that's not their job, really, although we would hope they would. And so your organization and others like your organization step in. But what's interesting about your organization, which I've actually not heard before, is you have a network of churches that are available to step in and say, welcome, we understand, and we're going to help. How did that start, Penny?
Well, it started, as Pastor Anderson stated, from this young man inside of Greaterford.
And you just handed me a sheet about him, a pamphlet, and I'm just struck. It's Thomas E. Robinson, Ph.D., Doctor of Ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
He acquired two doctor's degrees while he was there. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention the NAACP. His name is Ike. He's a gentleman that the program has been allowed to come under. Thomas Robinson has a whole group of guys who facilitate the program from inside. They vet the young men that come in. And if I go to mention names, I know that I'm going to miss somebody.
Yes, yes.
But those guys up there are phenomenal.
Yeah, it's an impressive story. It's very unfortunate. He's a Desert Storm veteran,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, he was highly intoxicated, committed what he says is a horrible crime. Mm-hmm. Out of, you know, he lost control of his emotions
mm-hmm.
When he was young, and he has been incarcerated for the past 20 years, mm-hmm. but he has certainly changed his life mm-hmm. for the better, mm-hmm. although while incarcerated.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. He's a preacher and he's a mentor, and he has a lot of skills and abilities so that. And as a matter of fact, he's coming up for commutation now.
Mm, okay.
And so hopefully things will work out for him as well as some of the other guys, Janito
right.
and Steve. Here I go mentioning names, right?
Yeah. And for those who may not know, commutation is a process whereby the sentence is commuted and the person who is convicted is able to be released.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes through the parole board, the governor's office, things like that.
That's great.
Pastor Anderson, you were about to say something?
Yeah. One of the things that Dr. Thomas Robinson attributed to his change was his spirituality.
Mm.
And so when he reached out to me, he said, you know, we can do all of this stuff, but if guys are not grounded spiritually, if they don't have a place that can accept them and that, you know, those who are of the faith, whatever
right.
faith that may be, can walk alongside of them, they can end up back here.
Right.
And so when he solicited my help, I'm the director of church health for Southern Baptist. And
yes.
so I'm in Pennsylvania and South Jersey. And so one of the things that I have at my resources is being able to contact churches all over our city. So when a guy is released, he can go to a church that will embrace him, that will accept him, that will help disciple and walk alongside of him and his family. And that's important.
Yes.
Because guys can come home and they come into a church and they might not feel welcome.
Right.
You
right.
know, and so my goal is to prepare them and prepare a church for them so that they can come home and have a safe and a blessed transition.
Yeah, I should say that Dr. Anderson, Pastor Anderson, is he's the director of Healthy Churches for the Baptist Resource Network, overseeing 350 churches throughout Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly that network and resources is something that you are bringing, which is missing, mm-hmm. that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And let me say that Pastor Anderson is the senior pastor at Living Water Christian Fellowship.
No, that's Pastor Dade.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at Pastor Dade saying Pastor Anderson. I'm sorry. Pastor Dade.
Don't give me another chance.
Listen, right? Pastor Dade is a senior pastor at Living Water Christian Fellowship. And what has been your what you're most proud about this program, and what is it that you're struggling with about this program?
One of the things that I'm proudest about is seeing the men come home. We place some men in some churches, and we've seen the growth in them since they've been home. They're, for instance, we have one guy who came home. He's an electrician.
Yes.
And the Lord so blessed him that he got a part-time job. The boss saw how good he worked. What a great guy he was. And told him, he said, listen, you need to be in the union. And so the boss automatically worked out some deals for him. So he's now an electrician union.
Wow.
Making good money with good benefits.
Yes.
So now what happens is his family's been restored. His children are brought back in the home. And now a family that was broken apart, now it's a cohesive unit.
Yes.
The other thing, one of the things I struggle with, that not enough people step up to the plate. And even society. They want to – this is probably the only country in the world that when men get out of prison, they refer to them as ex-convicts, not citizens, not just a normal person. You've got a tag on you for the rest of your life. And I think those are some of the things that need to be changed, that if you've paid your debt to society – listen, everybody at some point in their life does something wrong.
Yes.
And so if you've corrected your behavior – mm-hmm. And now you've been forgiven, and that means you're to be forgiven and not have a stigma on you the rest of your life.
Right.
You know, and so I think it's important that we even change the dialogue on how we view men who've come home.
Right. Well, let me say for our listeners, if you would like to go into this in a more deeper way, your opportunity is Saturday, April the 28th. At the Christian Stronghold, 4701 Lancaster Avenue. And Penny, what is this program going to be about?
It's going to be about education. People are going to learn how they can help our citizens who are coming home. It's going to be information. We're going to have a state senator there. We're going to have some state reps there. We're going to have a panel of legislators as well as some returning citizens mm-hmm. who'll be able to answer some questions. And we have many people here in Philadelphia who have been touched by someone who's been incarcerated. They'll be able to come out and get some help, get an understanding of what's going on, or even how they can get some help
right.
with their present situation. I just want to say that it starts at 10, but registration starts at 9.
It's a free event.
It's a free
and listen,
event.
Be among the first 300 so you make sure you get your lunchbox. Don't be number 301.
You won't get to eat.
Oh my goodness, no. And listen, it's going to be hosted by Solomon Jones.
Praise.
Yes, Praise 107.9. Praise 107.9. Great host, wonderful person, doing a lot of good things, and he will be there along with so many important other people that need to be involved in this conversation. And in many parts of our city where we live, there is someone who is coming back Philadelphia.
Absolutely.
And we need to make sure for all our sakes that they do well.
Mm. Yes.
Well, listen, I really appreciate the spirituality portion of it. I'm getting tongue-tied here. Because, you know, like so many people, I believe violence starts in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to change the heart in order to solve this problem.
Amen. Amen.
Amen. When you bring people back and you try to give them all the material things, but you haven't changed their heart, that likelihood of success is really quite diminished.
Mm-hmm.
And, this organization consists of many good-hearted people doing their best to make sure that we can reduce crime, violence, and see that people throughout our city are living as good and as positive a life as possible. And in today's world, this is so important that we deal with this issue. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Listen, again, Saturday, April the 28th. Get there at 9 o'clock to register and get your lunchbox. Hey, Christian Stronghold, 4701 Lancaster Avenue. Well, listen, stay tuned. After this commercial break, we're going to be talking to an amazing person, Bishop Peter Huang, and the work that he's done on racial reconciliation.
You are listening to In the Know with David O. Informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio on 860 AM WWDB.
If you've suffered an injury from a motor vehicle crash, trip and fall, construction, or work-related accident, contact the Padova firm to speak with John Padova himself. You've heard the name. That's because for over 25 years, John has been winning for his clients. John is dedicated to ensuring his clients are fully compensated. Call 215-893-0700. That's 215-893-0700. Don't suffer more than you have to. Call John Padova today. Help is on the way.
Here at Sonny's Famous Cheesesteaks, we have the utmost respect for the founding fathers of our fair city's most celebrated sandwich. But we also understand the inevitability of time marching on. So come to Sonny's in Old City for a revolutionary take on the classic. And try the cheesesteak that Alan Richmond of GQ magazine named the best in Philadelphia. And declare your inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of cheesiness. Sonny's Famous Steaks, 228 Market.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be. Weinerman Pain and Wellness, on the web at WeinermanPainandWellness.com.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
Gracie Jiu-Jitsu begins with one basic premise. Technique trumps all. Proven techniques allow the weak to overcome the strong. Learn self-defense that works, all while improving your physical condition, mental outlook, and healthy lifestyle. Gracie Academy Philadelphia will help you reach your goals. Take two free classes and see for yourself. Gracie Academy, 1231 Bainbridge Street, Philadelphia. Call them 215-830-6501 or visit their website at phlbjj.com. Get started at Gracie Academy, Philadelphia.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by the Philly Labor RX Injured Workers Pharmacy Network, featuring PPC Pharmacy, First Choice Pharmacy, and Precision Scripts, providing injured workers with premium products and services from the point of injury through the entire healing process. The Philly Labor RX Pharmacy Network cares about injured workers.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness. From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Oh.
All right, and we are back. Listen, we were, in case you missed it, we were talking to Penny McDonald, Executive Director of Community Forgiveness and Restoration, along with her co-chairs. That is Pastor Larry Anderson and Pastor Daryl Dade, talking about the work that they do and the event that they're having on Saturday, April the 28th, 4701 Lancaster Avenue. Check that out. And now I'm speaking to Bishop Peter Hwang. He is a Korean-American pastor. He's the 32nd president of the Council of Korean Southern Baptist Churches in America, and he's a local pastor in Upper Darby. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We've been friends for a long time, so I could tell you that Pastor Hwang, Bishop Hwang, has done a lot of work in our local community, but one in particular that he is well known for in among many of our African American clergy members is his work in taking African American pastors to Korea.
Yes.
And why do you do that, Pastor? Would you tell our listeners?
I came to States in 1975 as a student to study the theology.
Yes.
And after I finished my MDiv, I planted one Southern Baptist Korean church in Philadelphia area.
Yes.
And then sooner after, right after my church planted, the all the Korean churches surrounding Philadelphia County, they decided to have a council of Korean churches in Greater Philadelphia.
Yes.
And I've been jumped in as a new pastor, and I've been served about 10 years in a lot of different functions. After 10 years of serving, we have been tough community issues between the Korean-American, typically with the African-American.
Racial tensions.
That's right.
Problems,
yeah.
Other types of things.
Yeah. Many Koreans, they immigrate here, and then and by some, you know, by chance, they've been situated largely, mainly in black neighbors.
Yes, and in African-American neighborhoods.
That's right.
Yes.
And after they have business in that communities, because of their language barrier and their cultural barrier, made a lot of misunderstanding.
Yeah, one of them that comes up a lot, I remember, is that in Korea, typically a merchant will put the money on the counter so that you can see it. But in America, usually the money is handed to the hand of the customer.
That's correct. And not only that, we have we've been grown from the so-called shame culture.
What is that, shame culture?
That is the woman supposed not exposed to others.
Not true anymore, but certainly. But listen, don't go to Korea. You know, you'll get some serious women fight back. But certainly in the 80s, in the 70s, yeah, it was more customary that women would not look directly into the eyes of a man.
Still, that is going on.
I don't know. I have an experience, I got to tell you. But, yes, I you know, so that created a lot of misunderstanding.
Especially those in the store situation that husband is working inside of the stores.
Yes.
But usually the wife, they are set on the cashiers.
Yes, at the cashier.
They have to give the changes. If they give the changes to the palm of any customer, that means insult themselves, and also that's not good. Gesture to others.
Yes. And let me just point out for our listeners that I remember I went to Korea for the first time ever. I was born in Philadelphia. First time ever, I went in, I think it was 1986. And just how rapidly the country of Korea has changed just so dramatically,
yes.
Not just the buildings, but the customs, the culture, and the people. But in the 1970s, after a change in the immigration law, many Koreans immigrated to the United States for opportunity, mm-hmm. but they didn't have any money when they came over.
That's right.
And so they could not, if they could not find a job or get a job, they could only, as they did in Korea, start a little store, do a little business. And in areas that were wealthy, they mm-hmm. could not afford mm-hmm. to do that. And so they ended up in poor neighborhoods,
that's
whether
correct.
Poor Hispanic neighborhoods, poor white neighborhoods, or poor African-American neighborhoods. And here in Philadelphia, they set up in poor African-American neighborhoods many times where they did not understand the history of the people they were serving.
That's right.
They also didn't understand the civil rights movement. They didn't understand the sacrifice of African-Americans in the military, trying to vote, the history of slavery. And then the African-American community, they didn't understand the history of occupation in Korea, mm-hmm. World War II. And so two groups of people not understanding each other, but coexisting in a tough area.
That's correct. And because of those unknown things to mm-hmm. each
yes.
communities, and always tension came up.
Yes.
And it ended up to the really life
murders, yeah. robberies, people going to prison, mm-hmm. All kind of things. And mm-hmm. so how did you end up with other clergy organizing this kind of racial reconciliation ministry?
So back in 1990, the council, they appointed me.
Council of Korean Churches.
Yeah, Council of Korean Churches, they assigned to me that to building up the relationship between the Korean churches and other churches, mainline churches, and as well as African American churches.
Mm, interesting.
And I tried to what is the best way to bring these two communities to find a way to get together. And only one thing we thought at the time, that is let them have some first-hand information or mm-hmm. the knowledge or the experience about the Korean and Korea.
Because Koreans were in America, and so maybe take the African-American clergy to Korea.
That's right.
Now, that's pretty expensive, isn't it?
Well, that's right. So back in 1990, the first group was sent from this area in 1991.
Yes.
And at the time, all the Korean churches, they raised the money to sponsor one pastor for each church.
How many churches?
I believe about 35 churches were involved.
So 35 pastors?
No, about 15.
About 15 pastors sponsored by about 35 churches. So they flew to Korea mm-hmm. where they had a program of going to other churches, meeting people, and learning about the culture and the history.
Mm-hmm. Historical site and then also the industrial site. So they saw how the Korean looks like, and also how they are diligently working for their life, and then also the Korean church and culture.
Mm.
And then in those days, the first group, among them, the Reverend Bill Moore, he was serving as a clergy, president of a black clergy so long time ago.
Yes.
And another pastor, he deceased, but the Reverend Thomas Ritter.
Thomas Ritter, sure.
Yeah, they are all water group. But,
yes.
And after they came back, they awakened who the true Korean looks like. And then from there, we tried to building up the united service between the Korean churches and the African-American churches. So we even conducted several times. And after that, probably every other years, I try to make a group from locally or the nationwide, bring the African-American clergy and educator or the community leaders. And one time we had a bunch of the police people.
Oh, you brought some of our law enforcement to Korea.
So, you know, law, well, they are the one in the front line to meet the people.
Yes, so yes, our police, yes, they are on the front line of a lot of issues and problems in our communities and neighborhoods.
From this, you know, the program, I found out that there are so many common denominators between the Korean and the African American.
Yes.
There are so many similar things.
It is interesting, isn't it? You know, and it just goes to say that if people knew each other better, they would find so many things in common.
Uh-huh, that's right.
Yeah.
So from the door space, then we can build up the friendship. With the friendship, we can build up the trust relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So in nowadays, in the Philadelphia, I think among the 50 states, this is the most beautiful city to have the real beautiful relationship between the Korean and the African American communities.
Mm.
And I really appreciated to the African American leaders and the communities in this country simply because without their sacrifice, I think there is no successful Asian American immigrant can be settled down in America.
Very true. Yeah. Very true. This, if it was not for the civil rights movement and the sacrifice of many people, but focused particularly on African Americans and legal discrimination, certainly the immigrants who come to the United States today would be faced with quite a different situation.
Yeah, and still, so as a minority, the African American, they are the largest group of the minority in this society, as well as the Latino. But the Asian, especially Korean American, with the close attachment with the African American and the Latino American, as you know, united the all of a minority can be a majority of the country sooner or later, I believe.
Certainly all people getting together. And one of the things I really appreciate about what you do, Bishop Hwang, is you reach the commonality of what we aspire to be. Certainly everyone in the church aspires to the same common values of justice, kindness, and sacrifice and other things. And we have to see it in each other.
Mm-hmm. You know, you have your own personal the history of your family about this, you know, that the racial tension.
Yes.
Back in 1958, I remember.
Yeah, I'll do it quickly because we're running out of time.
Okay.
But let me say what Bishop Hwang is talking about is my cousin was murdered in 1958 by a group of 11 African American youth, and they, you know, the city was looking at the death penalty, but his parents and my father and mother sent a letter asking for the most lenient treatment possible under the law, and actually raised money for their vocational rehabilitation, education, spiritual guidance when they were released from prison.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, as a child, saw that. And eventually, as I've gotten older and older and older, I have begun to be more and more affected by the idea of forgiveness and you know, letting everyone have the best possible opportunity, and certainly what is God's will. And certainly I have been forgiven and given many opportunities, and I begrudge no one that. But certainly it is a wonderful calling, and the work that you have done is so appreciated. There are so many pastors that I run into as a city councilman, and they're some very impressive pastors. And then to my surprise, years later, they'll say, oh, I went to Korea with Bishop Hwang. I said, oh, yeah, I know Bishop Hwang. So you have many people who, you know, who have been to Korea through you, and certainly we can celebrate that.
Yeah.
Our time is up. I'm just surprised sometimes how quickly this show goes. Mm-hmm. But let me tell everyone, stay tuned, because we'll be back after this commercial break talking to Christine Riddick about her son Eric and the issue of proof of innocence.
You are listening to In the Know with David O. Informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio on 860 AM WWDB.
If you've suffered an injury from a motor vehicle crash, trip and fall, construction, or work-related accident, contact the Padova firm to speak with John Padova himself. You've heard the name. That's because for over 25 years, John has been winning for his clients. John is dedicated to ensuring his clients are fully compensated. Call 215-893-0700. That's 215-893-0700. Don't suffer more than you have to. Call John Padova today. Help is on the way.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia Radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be. Weinerman Pain and Wellness, on the web at WeinermanPainandWellness.com.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
Gracie Jiu-Jitsu begins with one basic premise. Technique trumps all. Proven techniques allow the weak to overcome the strong. Learn self-defense that works, all while improving your physical condition, mental outlook, and healthy lifestyle. Gracie Academy Philadelphia will help you reach your goals. Take two free classes and see for yourself. Gracie Academy, 1231 Bainbridge Street, Philadelphia. Call them 215-830-6501 or visit their website at phlbjj.com. Get started. Started at Gracie Academy, Philadelphia.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by the Philly Labor RX Injured Workers Pharmacy Network, featuring PPC Pharmacy, First Choice Pharmacy, and Precision Scripts, providing injured workers with premium products and services from the point of injury through the entire healing process. The Philly Labor RX Pharmacy Network cares about injured workers.
We are back. Thank you for tuning in. You know, we were talking in our first segment with Penny McDonald and Pastors Larry Anderson and Daryl Dade of Community Forgiveness and Restoration. And then we were talking to Bishop Peter Huang, a name that is familiar to so many of our clergy leaders in the African-American community, for his ministry of racial reconciliation, particularly between Korean-Americans and the African-American community. But now we're going to talk to Christine Riddick. She is a mother. Let me start with that. She's also been judge of elections here in Philadelphia for the past 20 years, and she's an advisory council member at the Francis Myers Recreation Center and a member of the 12th Police District Advisory Board. Her late husband was a Philadelphia police officer. But the reason she is joining us today is talking about proof of innocence. Her son, Eric, is incarcerated right now. He spent 26 years in prison. But let me read you this. This is from an opinion, a concurring statement by a Superior Court judge. And this is what it says. No system of criminal justice is perfect. However, a system of criminal justice that prevents the correction of obvious errors is easily improved if only the legislature could see fit to do it. He is talking about the Post-Conviction Relief Act. And that is an act when evidence is not provided to the court through the, what I would say, negligence of the attorney. But the Post-Conviction Relief Act here in Pennsylvania is a very tough act, and in some cases, and certainly if it is my case or your case, a matter of grave importance to us. And so what this judge writes is this. I write separately only to express my utmost displeasure with the Post-Conviction Relief Act's failure. to facilitate justice in this case, where it is clear to all that it is likely that an innocent man sits behind bars for no better reason than a poorly conceived statute. What does that mean? Well, what the judge is saying is this is the right decision to deny the appeal under this law, but this law is poorly written, and therefore, under this law, a person who is likely innocent remains behind bars. Who we're talking about is Eric Riddick, the son of Christine Riddick. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Councilman O, and good afternoon to the radio listeners. I really appreciate Councilman O giving me this opportunity to continue to bring awareness to not just my son's case, but to all those behind the walls who feel they have no voice, that there's no one outside the walls that is trying to make sure, one, those who are wrongfully convicted, that their information is put out there to those who can correct the injustice, but for also for those who are looking for redemption and second chances.
Yeah, let me tell everybody, this is how I met Christine Riddick. She came to my office. She was going to different council offices in City Hall, and she's been to different legislative mm-hmm. elected officials. Apparently, I did not mm-hmm. know that. I wasn't there when she stopped by. I caught her on my way in. I was somewhere else, and so we didn't get a chance to talk, but we set a time to meet. Mm-hmm. But what she did is she left a booklet behind. It is a booklet of evidence that her son and her daughter-in-law and that she put together. And so basically, you know, she set an appointment, said, you know, please read this before we meet. And so the book sat on my desk for a while. And then before meeting, I picked it up. And the first thing I did was read a concurring opinion. And it is the opinion that I just read. Wow. Justice Fitzgerald joins in this concurring statement. I mean, the thing about it is that I have never seen a judge of a court in an appeal write and say that likely an innocent man is behind bars mm-hmm. because of a failure of a statute. Now, that is a pretty strong statement.
Yes.
And so I turned the page and I began to read about the case, and a couple things jump out at me. And I'm a former prosecutor. I've done a criminal defense mm-hmm. as well. And so this is one of those very rare cases where not only does someone say, I'm innocent, but hands you the proof of it, the evidence of it. And so let me start with this. There was a person who was unfortunately murdered mm-hmm. and shot, and then a eyewitness says Eric Riddick did it. He was on a balcony and he fired a weapon downwards and mm-hmm. shot this man. The scientific evidence, the forensic evidence, is that the bullets were fired horizontally or from a position
upward
down to mm-hmm. up, not up to down,
right?
Down to up,
and not downward,
upward and straight. So what happened? There were two different types of bullets, a 32 and a 22.
Exactly.
And so it would indicate from the angles and everything else that two separate weapons were fired mm-hmm. straight and from a downward to upward position, and that would contradict
exactly.
scientifically that someone standing above the victim
exactly.
would have fired downward.
Right.
Next, the defendant, Eric Riddick, had alibi witnesses,
three
of them, who were in court yet never called to testify. And it appears, although I can't say for sure, but it appears that the reason they weren't called is because the defense attorney never provided notice of alibi witness. And for those who don't know this, you just can't bring up an alibi witness who says, I was with this person, he weren't there, unless you provide notice to the prosecution. And
exactly.
so three alibi witnesses were in court throughout the trial, ready to testify, never called. And then the eyewitness recanted
mm-hmm.
and said, I did not tell the truth.
Right. actually provided affidavits.
Affidavits,
to that
yes. And so all this is brought into court mm-hmm. on a post-conviction relief appeal.
Right.
And under the law, this does not get him a new trial, a new opportunity, or does not get him out of jail.
Right. And the unfortunate thing is that the court's reasoning was because of a technical error. The technical error being a particular paper was not filed in time, which is not true because my son's case continued based on what they say wasn't filed in time. So a technicality, my conclusion is a technicality is worth more than a human life, because a technicality can be changed. Just like a statute was written, it can be modified. It can be changed if it's shown to be cumbersome and burdensome to the very people that it's supposed to protect.
Yeah, let me say that years ago, many years ago, when I just got out of the military, mm-hmm. After having served in the district attorney's office, I was approached by some people from New York who brought a case to me about a father who was doing life imprisonment, convicted of murdering his daughter. And they said he's innocent. And I said, well, yeah, everybody says they're innocent. I don't know, you know. But they presented me with some documents because I asked for it. And I said, listen, I will look at it. Mm-hmm. And they were not brief and well organized like the booklet you gave me. So I poured through it. And what struck me was that there was a fire that occurred in the cabin in the Poconos. And the person who was found guilty and had passed his appeals and lost his appeals and everything, and so basically he was the father of a young lady, and he said that there was an electrical fire in the ceiling, mm-hmm. and that that's what happened. And then what I found was that the prosecution brought witnesses who said that he mixed 76 gallons of home heating fuel with gasoline and poured it throughout the cabin and then lit it on fire from the front door. And there was evidence that there was an electrical fire. But at trial, instead of saying there was an electrical fire, the attorney said, yes, there was 76 gallons of fuel. It was an arson, but it was a daughter who was committing suicide. And so that is a ridiculous a thing for the jury.
Yes.
Did he do it, or did the daughter, you know, frail right. young woman, do all this? She had no car. He had no mm-hmm. car. And so that issue, he was found guilty. Mm-hmm. And so once the evidence was presented, once it was found by me that there was evidence, and I got even more evidence that it was an electrical fire. And listen, it's very simple, folks. Despite all the expert testimony, what it comes down to this: if a fire is set with fuel on a carpet and it burns from the ground up, the bottom of the table is burned more than the top. Mm. The bottom of the mattress is burned, not the mm. top. But what happens when the top of the mattress is burned? What happens when the top of the mattress is burned but not the bottom? What happens when the top of the desk is burned but not the bottom? Well, the fire came from the top. And there's so much simple evidence that shows that it's an electrical fire. But despite all this, we went all the way up, and through the PCRA, the Post-Conviction Relief Act hearing, the standard is that the attorney, for any reason really that he chooses, can decide to call witnesses, not call witnesses, mm-hmm. present evidence or not. And so what is new evidence? It's not what's new evidence that you and I think of it. It's evidence that was not available at the time. So if the evidence was available to the attorney, even though the attorney didn't present it or didn't find it, didn't look for it, it's not new evidence. That's a pretty harsh standard.
Yeah.
And so when I and I'm happy to say that eventually through federal court, case. He was his appeal was successful, and he was released from prison. Okay. But after many, many years. Yeah. And in this case, this is the second time that I have seen evidence that shows that the person should not have been convicted in the first place.
Exactly.
And yet this evidence is not making a difference.
Right. And that's the harsh reality, I mean, that happens, unfortunately, when my conclusion, when egos and appearance become more important than a human's life, that it's like perceived lack, you know, like it's not important for them, for those who are charged with protecting us, will not take the time, regardless on what side you are, whether you're the prosecutor or the defense attorney. If it's wrong, it's wrong. My understanding, the lawyer's oath that they take is represent your client and not the system. That means your first duty is to your client.
Definitely prosecutor, not persecutor.
There you go.
Certainly,
yes.
If someone is guilty, if someone's done wrong, the prosecution prosecutes. It's up to the jury, the judge, a decision is made.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But in this case, after the fact, all this evidence comes up that refutes the idea that this person is guilty or should have been charged.
Exactly.
And it is not making a difference. So there's really two things that appears to me that needs to be done. One is we have to certainly bring this to the attention of the legislature.
Yes.
To say, listen, how can we have a statute that when you have proof that a person is innocent, it can't make a difference. It should.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is that we should certainly look at a federal appeal and also commutation or a pardon otherwise. But certainly there are many things that have to happen, and I know you are working hard on it. But again, Eric Riddick, with all this evidence, scientific and yes. otherwise, that he is not the person, but he did not really truly get his day in court.
Exactly. No due process. He really didn't receive due process. Councilman O, my hopes and what I was looking at, I know in the booklet, if you had a chance to look at it, mm-hmm. my the state representative, Joanna McClinton, wrote several letters on behalf of my son that's included in this Supreme Court brief that my son submitted, and my hope was that from a bipartisan position that I have my state representative, regardless, she's a Democrat, and Councilman O, who's a Republican, can bipartisanly echo,
yes,
you know, the same sentiment in terms of providing some type of form that the Supreme Court and others in the judicial system.
Okay, well, you definitely have that because, listen, doesn't matter what party you belong to,
right.
nobody should want an innocent man in jail.
Exactly.
All right, well, thank you for joining us. And listen, everyone, thank you for joining me. Tune in next Tuesday, 2 to 3, for In the Know with David O.
You've been listening to In the Know with David O. on 860 AM WWDB. Tune in again next Tuesday at 2 p.m. for more informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio with Philadelphia Councilman David O.